The 10K Collective, our sister podcast, is the world's newest e-commerce podcast, now live on Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It's for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. It's highly actionable, but it's focused on how to scale your business for sale or long-term profit, not short-term hacks. We have deep talks with real e-commerce sellers and experts in industries like sourcing, team building, and managing cash. Search your podcast app for 10K Collective or go to 10kcollective.com for show notes or to listen online. That's 10K for kilo, collective.com, 10kcollective.com.
I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. So the second type of deposit in the emotional bank account is attending to the little things, as Covey says. So customer service is a classic one with customers, for example, following up in a brief and respectful way with people, checking things are okay, including nice extras in the package, dealing with problems promptly, being very, you know, being easy, not being bureaucratic. For example, if somebody wants to get a refund, I mean, everybody has the expectation, even now on Amazon, in my experience, that not everybody, it's a gross exaggeration, but a lot of customers get angry quickly because I think they expect to be treated like a number, like a faceless person. And the more you treat them like a person and a human being and the way you would want to be treated, then the better they react, in my experience, which is not surprising, right? But I think a lot of people have an automatic expectation they're going to be treated badly. So if you don't do that, you already stand out, even now, even though it's kind of obvious amongst most educated Amazon sellers that you need to be quick in responding to problems, to apologize, to give a refund, to not argue about returns and all that stuff, unless you have a very expensive item. These sound like common sense, but they're still not common. So follow up in a respectful way and just solve problems quickly. When it comes to product supplier relationships, because you're paying them, a lot of people feel that they can be a bit ride roughshod over that. A lot of people, I'm meaning Amazon sellers or e-commerce sellers, and I've been guilty of that as well. But I think cultural niceties and ways of doing things are important. It's important to respect different things. If you ever fly over to China to meet your supplier, then try and be flexible in your approach to food, for example, and try and observe the cultural things. In different cultures, there can be things about touching or not touching, bowing, not bowing. Contact can be seen as very friendly or very aggressive. Just try and attune yourself to if it's a foreign culture. Even there are some cultural things between British sellers and British suppliers. I mean, there might be a sort of culture of don't come and talk to me until you've educated yourself about the industry, which is always a good idea, right? If you don't want to come across to a brand new supplier as not knowing anything about the industry, because then you'll get taken to the cleaners potentially in negotiations because they'll assume you're ignorant because you've shown that you are. And also that if you don't take the trouble, and this is a bit different between China, where you have literally thousands of factories available to you sometimes for a certain product type, versus if you're sourcing supplements in the UK, you might only have four. And in the situation where you only have four suppliers, guess what? The relationship between suppliers and the number of people who want to use them is flipped on its head. So you need to probably be more respectful in the sense of educating yourself about a particular supplier and their business model and the do's and don'ts on their pages before you approach them. For example, if they say on their pages geared to trade, to trading with wholesaling to you, that they don't do private labeling, then it may not be very sensible to phone them up and say, do you do private labeling? Because they've already given the answer in a place that you could get it without wasting their time. You get what I'm saying. So it's small things in a way. Again, it comes down to understanding the other person before you go in, really. Business partners, little things. My business partner was always very, very good at sending me birthday presents and Christmas presents, for example, which my wife was always quick to point out that I was bad at doing, which is true. I'm just generally bad at getting presents out on time. I'm just saying that now as I'm paranoidly scanning my memory for any upcoming birthdays in my family, but I think I'm safe in May. So that's one of those little things that really can help. It shows a lot of, put it this way, receiving a present always feels great. So that's a very good positive there. Being on time for meetings and don't cancel last minute. I mean, I think that's one of those little things that if you're constantly late for meetings, and I say this is something that I can be guilty of. I try not to run too late, but I'm often, you know, 5-10 minutes late for the odd things. If it's in person and if it's online, I tend to be 2-3 minutes late. That's kind of my average. And mea culpa, this is a bad thing, right? It's not respectful. So this is one of those things I could do better. Lots of little things like that. So timekeeping, communication, showing that you value the relationship. These never go out of style, and they're small things, but they can become the big things over time. As Covey says, in relationships, the small things are the big things, especially if you are having a bit of a difficult time with the big things. It's really good to make sure the small courtesies are retained, and the way you speak to people, the language you use in an email, being on time, the language you can use in an email or any written communications is really, really important, because that can really come across badly quite easily on an email. You can sound rather blunt in an email in a way that if you said something in person, you can soften it with the tone of voice. If you're speaking on a video call or in person, you can soften it by your body language and you're smiling while you say it. Just be very aware that if you're writing emails, particularly, people got a habit of kind of rubbing each other up the wrong way. Equally, don't be offended if your Chinese supplier seems rather blunt. It could be a cultural difference, but bear in mind they're speaking in a second or possibly third language to you. And English and Chinese are very, very different languages indeed. And my experience of them, I don't speak Chinese, but I did used to teach English as a foreign language. And I had a few Chinese students, Mandarin speakers. So I do know that there's a big gap. So again, the flip side of being careful how you put things in words to people is don't take things too personally. If an email seems a bit offhand or something, it may just be that the person is not very good at English. And that can apply to English speakers. Some people are good at numbers and running businesses, but aren't that gifted at expressing themselves in writing. And that's okay. Just take it with a pinch of salt. Deposit number three in the emotional bank account is keeping commitments. Really basic, but really important to just ask yourself. All of this stuff sounds so obvious that you can just gloss over it. My challenge to you is this. Take this list of stuff and go and check through every area of your business and ask yourself the question, are we doing this? Because if you're not, it's a pretty easy, straightforward, and in the sense of easy or simple, not necessarily easy to do, but simple and straightforward way to improve your business out of sight by just doing low tech, very simple things. Like this. So number three, keeping commitments. If you've got a customer, absolutely critical. If you make promises in your marketing, that those promises are fulfilled in your product's performance. And sometimes, and we'll talk about this in a second, but they have unconscious expectations, in which case you need to deal with that. But if there's a commitment of some kind you've made, for example, delivering in a certain time frame, that's more or less down to Amazon if you're using Fulfilled by Amazon. But nevertheless, that needs to be dealt with. If you have a product supplier, make sure you pay them on time and try not to move the goalpost, for example, in adding in features after you've set up an order, because that's going to make life very difficult for them. And they'll probably respond, no, we can't do it, or yes, we can, but it's going to cost you a lot of extra money. So try to be organized and give them decent notice for things. That's a courtesy there. With other suppliers, just make sure you do things like, for example, pay them on as agreed, give them the information as agreed. For example, if you've agreed to send a brief to your photographer, including a list of links to similar products that you think are good examples that you want them to copy in terms of the style of photography, then make sure you do that. And then you'll get a more respectful relationship with them. And then you've got the right to turn around to them and say, I've done what we agreed. Could you please deliver those photos on time or whatever it is? Business partners. This is a huge one. If you have a business partner, then task and project management, really, really critical. Make sure you honor agreements. If you've agreed to, for example, do the bookkeeping, make sure you keep on top of that. Make sure you follow through. If you do things, if you've agreed a timescale to do things, make sure you do that in a timely way. And this can be one of the places we are least disciplined in my experience of business. I certainly can speak for myself there. I was lucky enough to work with some very disciplined business partners. I tend to need more of a prod than other people to get things done in a timely way. And that's okay up to a point. You've got to kind of manage each other. One of the difficulties with a pure 50-50 split business partnership type ownership of a business is that you're both kind of in charge which can be very, very difficult because neither of you's really responsible for keeping everyone managed and chasing up on, have you done that task? And, you know, that sort of simple task management, people management. But one of the things you can do is divide up into different areas and departments of your business and keep each other accountable that way. So if somebody takes on the task of managing a particular product line with suppliers, then you can delegate the management of that person to the other person. So partner A says, okay, I'm going to deal with supplier management. And partner B says, okay, I'm going to keep a timetable of what you should be doing. And I'm going to check in with you once a week to make sure that's moving forward. You can, in practice, just institute a regular meeting once a week. I've been pretty bad at that sort of rhythm and stuff. So this is one of the areas of greatest weakness for me personally. And I must apologize to those who've worked me over the years for this slightly, what's the word? It's not like I'm trying to slide out of commitments. I simply, I'm not very disciplined about keeping tabs on it. So again, that comes down to personal management, putting first things first and being clear about things. That's a personal time management issue that can show up in a relationship quite quickly. So keeping commitments is absolutely critical within a partnership. It's also important to deal with, absolutely critical for your business, for your products and your performance as a business as a whole, to keep commitments you make to your customers. If you get those two things right, then I think your business is on a sound footing. If you're breaking your promises to your customers because your products aren't working, then you've got a big problem, and you know it can be solved, but that is a fundamental relationship issue, I would say, as well as a technical issue and a financial one. Ultimately, it comes down to relationships as well. So the emotional bank account is what we're talking about here. Six major deposits, in other words, building people's trust in you. Deposit number four, clarifying expectations. This is really, really critical. And often this can be one of the places where things go wrong and you wonder why it's come out of a clear blue sky. Bam, suddenly a problem lands on your lap. With your customers, it's very, very important. There's certain things you need to clarify expectations of what your product will or won't do. For example, clothing sizes, very important. You can get into big problems very quickly with baby things, which say small, medium, large. This is suitable for an 18-month-year-old, for example. I mean, who specifies how big an 18-month-year-old baby is? And then the answer is there is no internationally agreed specification. They're human beings. So these can be problem areas. And you really need to clarify, not just with numbers again, but you need to recognize that people shop fast. So if you just bury the information in, say, this is 5 inches long or 18 centimeters or whatever, that's one thing, but you need to help people realize that. Why? Spelling it out in the photographs, the photography is a great place to make sure your message gets communicated on Amazon, because people often don't read the text elements of a listing. Product suppliers. Wow, there's so many expectations that go wrong in this place if you're not careful. It's a huge thing to have a detailed specification. What you think of as an acceptable version of something might be so different from your Chinese supplier. Bear in mind that a lot of Chinese suppliers supply countries outside of the Europe and America or Japan, are the traditional quotes Western or developed country markets, right? China is a huge market just for Amazon, never mind off Amazon and Taobao and other such sites. And India is huge as well. And don't forget, and Russia is also a pretty big market. And those are very big markets with a very different expectation of price and quality than the so-called Western or developed world markets. So bear in mind, it's not surprising that they will have a very different view of what a specification needs to be for a particular product and what the quality control, what represents good, bad, or indifferent quality. Timing is also a culturally specific thing. I mean, in Europe, that varies even between, say, Northern and Southern Europe. But Germans and Japanese are famously incredibly punctual. The Japanese, probably more than anyone in the world, but it's a pretty close match. The Brits and the US, there's probably a cultural expectation within business culture of being on time, more or less, with things. In China, the timing thing is quite different, in the sense that if you rush and you sound like you're in a hurry with your Chinese supplier, it's not going to go well, because either they're going to assume you're desperate, which you probably are, and up the price of things over time, or they will cut corners on the quality. So be very, very careful with rushing in China. Financial expectations and timing, we've talked about, but financial expectations are a little bit more clear in a lot of ways, in the sense that it's numbers. So it's either you're going to give them a 30% deposit or you're not. You know, it's fairly black and white. But having said that, it is a good idea to clarify that. If it isn't absolutely written in stone somewhere, make sure you're very, very clear about that. expectations with other people, for example, photographers. If they're going to provide photos for you, that's one thing. But if you're expecting your photographer to start to do graphic design, that's probably outside what they're prepared to do. And it's important to clarify exactly what you do and do not expect from somebody as early in the process as you can get. You may have to have a conversation first, but it's particularly important before you sign some kind of contract or before you agree on a figure, because if you change the job specification, quite naturally, people will change the figure, the cost of that. And by the way, going back to Chinese suppliers, very easy to end up thinking of things last minute and then adding them into the mix and then being shocked when your Chinese supplier says, well, we'll have to change the price of that and the timescale, because if you change the features you want, whether it's of something physical or more digital, like whether it's the features of a product or a photography brief, then expect the price to change. So try and get that wobbling out of the way first, and then come to a clear point where you go, right, we're signing off on this. There's a contract. There's a purchase order. If you're buying stuff in China, you probably don't need a purchase order for photography unless you're spending thousands. And then there's financial clarification as well. Business partners, again, oh, this is so huge. Defining expectations is so, so important. Just because you both own the company and you're kind of, in theory, aligned in your interests, and it's not as obviously adversarial as you versus supplier sometimes, can lead you into being very vague about this stuff. And that can create all sorts of bad feeling down the line. We've already talked about clarifying long-term goals. I think that is really, really critical that you have those conversations and that you keep having those conversations and talk about how the business fits in with their life and the rest of their life and how the rest of it's going. You need to define roles. This is, again, really critical. If you end up with two people doing the same thing all the time, which drives you a bit nuts, and I've experienced that, then it's really good to define roles. Who's going to do the tax return at the end of the year or liaise with your company accountant? Who is going to do the sourcing for a particular product? Indeed, how are you going to split things up? Is it by department or is it by product line? When you've got few product lines, product line is probably the natural way to split it up. So each person takes responsibility for a particular product line. Later down the line, there might be one person who has a particular expertise in an area. And there is a member of the 10K Collective, for example, who has a business partner who is based out in Hong Kong, and he himself is Kiwi origin, so from New Zealand, but lives in the UK. So there's a very obvious split there that the business partner is the expert in sourcing, in fact, owns the part of a factory. So there's a very clear split there. So that's clearer than usual. But if it isn't clear, make sure you define roles, who's going to do what, and also who isn't going to do what. The two things to avoid are duplication and, of course, where something falls between two stools, the classic, I thought you were going to do that conversation, right? Which I'm sure anyone who's been married for more than 5 minutes is familiar with. Guess what? You want your business partnership to be probably more formally organized than that, because you don't have the kind of glue of sexual attraction and affection and the cuddle to make up for shortfalls in that, at least not in most normal business partnerships. Of course, if your business partner is your wife or husband, which is quite common, then I would argue you need to be even more careful in how you manage your business relationships, because if your business relationship goes wrong, it's going to affect your personal relationship as well. So there's a huge amount of work to do here for most of us, myself included. You've got to think about clarifying the amount of time each business partner or team member will contribute. That's really important. And you've also got to be aware of the rest of their life. If they've got kids that are young and they're going to be kept awake half the night, then you need to set realistic expectations there. Look at their other financial commitments to the rest of their life. We've already talked about that. So do they own property empire, for example, that demands cash? And then the financial commitments within the business. Now, who's contributing what and roughly what sort of amount of money if you've got available now and in future, which is a critical thing for capital intensive business model. Whew, hard to even say this. Last two deposits, emotional deposits. Deposit number five, emotional deposit, remember, being something that increases somebody's trust within you, your relationship. Deposit number five, showing personal integrity. Showing, in other words, if you say you have values, that you act on them. So they say honesty is putting into words what your actions are accurately. And they say integrity is putting your words into action. So if you make a promise to a customer, you better deliver on that. And if you mess up, you better deal with it quickly. So deliver on your promises. This comes down to getting competent at working with and selecting suppliers, working with your supplier to get a good choice of product materials and design, working with them to make sure quality control is taken care of and resolving issues around that, and then having inspection yourself to make sure that you assure quality control as well. So all of that contributes to you, your product delivering on your behalf to promises you've made to your customer. And all businesses work on the basis of making a promise and delivering on it, really, or failing to. And then again, if you fail to deliver on promises, apologize, replace, refund. This is the holy trinity of simple tactical actions ASAP, very, very fast. Be genuinely apologetic. If you get defensive, then you are basically in the customer's eyes. Whilst it's understandable from your perspective, from the customer's perspective, you made a promise and you broke it, and now you're being defensive instead of apologizing and dealing with it. That goes down very badly, just as badly as it would in a personal situation. With product suppliers, try and be honest about future orders. We all sort of BS a little bit about that and say, oh, I'm planning to build an empire. But I think it's better if you do genuinely have a plan to build an empire and negotiate with respect as well. I mean, you can ask for lower money or whatever with understanding of somebody's situation. There's a whole bunch of cultural stuff around that, but try and show some integrity. The main thing I would say there is with Chinese suppliers, don't be too naive and expect too much personal integrity from people. If they are willing to cut corners, then that's just normal business in China, I'm afraid, and that may be in other places as well. I'm only saying that about Chinese suppliers because it's often true, and most of us will source from China. That's probably true for many other countries as well. So if you know you're dealing with a culture that has that expectation, there's a Chinese saying, if you can fool him, then do fool him, something along those lines, then make sure you're not naive. Just make sure you manage that expectation with, or manage that situation by having quality control. But just because somebody else acts with a lack of personal integrity doesn't mean you have to follow them down that route. And I particularly advise against that when you're dealing with developed world customers who will have high expectations of your integrity. If you start selling shoddy goods and you don't really deal with that properly, your reputation is going to dive bomb pretty damn fast, and in my opinion, deservedly so. But even if we take that moral thing out of the equation, it's not good business practice. What else do we need to do? Yeah, to personal integrity, I guess, with other people means basically trying to honor commitments. And if you mess up on that, dealing with it honestly with business partners, I guess it means do what you've agreed, honor your commitments, and again, apologize sincerely and change your ways if you don't. Talking of apologies, deposit number 6 in the emotional bank account, the last one, 6 of 6, is apologizing sincerely. Note when you make a withdrawal. If you mess up with customers because you break what they feel, or you've broken trust with them by not delivering on your promises, then you must apologize, refund, and replace as quickly as possible. I've already talked about that. With product suppliers, negotiate. If you're late paying up, for example, apologize and don't make a habit of it. With product suppliers, they probably won't release your products until you pay the remaining balance. In most cases, that's quite right too. So you won't normally get the chance to do that. But if you have a photographer, for example, and they invoice you in May, then don't start paying them in July, August, September, because you're going to risk them going broke if everyone did that. And that's just not good. If you're going to be late paying, for example, just tell them up front. That's always good. If you've got creditors, then tell people up front, apologize if you do it, and don't make a habit of it, because you will ruin your relationships there. What else? Business partners. Yeah. I mean, it's so important. You are going to, with somebody you interact with as much and as often as a business partner, you probably are going to mess up. Do the work, apologize, and revisit the practicality of the workload. If you're not going to be able to sustain something, rather than trying to kid yourself or your business partner, then revisit it and make it more sustainable, more realistic if you're constantly falling behind. And again, that comes down to personal management. The private victory precedes public victory. If you are bad at time management and you simply aren't good at estimating how much you can realistically get done in a week versus what you actually do, guess what? That's a personal time management issue, and you're going to have to take care of that before you can really be a reliable business partner. And that's certainly something that I struggle with. I'm not great on time management. It's one of those things I just need to keep working on. And I use a coach to keep me accountable. And just, if in doubt, don't take on too much and then let people down. Just say up front, I'm sorry, I'm not going to have time to do that. And then you don't create an expectation that you then break, right? So that comes down to, there's an interesting place where integrity and competence need to overlap. So you cannot deliver on your promises to your customers if you have no competence in selecting the right suppliers, reviewing design and materials, and reviewing at your own quality control. For example, that comes down to technical competence. but it will be perceived as a lack of integrity by your customer, even if you might say, oh, I can blame somebody else. It's not my fault. Well, guess what? You're the one who picked the supplier and accepted the products. So there's not much point in passing on the blame. You can try, but your customer won't wear that. They don't care. Same thing with other people generally. You need to get a grip on your own, get your own house in order before you can really keep integrity. So the last thing I'd say about insincere apologies, it's no good using an apology as a way of life, right? Most of the time you need to honor your commitments, and it's only the odd mess up on that where you should be apologizing. If you just spend your life apologizing for being late for things all the time, and I've done that for years in a lot of my life, guess what? This is a sign you've got to change and you've got to get a grip on things. So another place, talking of problems, however, Covey says problems or production problems are PC opportunities or production capability opportunities. If you've got a customer on Amazon, the classic example that you messed up with, if you apologize, replace and refund and give them great customer service, quite often they can result in a one-star review becoming a five-star review. I've experienced that multiple times, and I think most people have who have been selling on Amazon for a significant time. And rather than the rather neutral thing where people just buy a product, think it's okay, and don't bother leaving a review. So quite often you can flip an angry customer to a really loyal customer much more easily actually than you can turn a very neutral person to being passionate either way, either for or against your product. So this really is true in my experience with product suppliers. If your supplier deals with a problem, particularly a quality problem, normally you'll probably trust them more than a new one. And they say it's better the devil you know. And that's true in my experience. All suppliers are going to have some problems. Nobody's going to be perfect. And being perfectionist is not really the way to go, particularly dealing with Chinese suppliers. Equally, dealing with a new quality control issue improves your skill set as a retailer or product developer in multiple ways. For example, negotiation skills, intercultural understanding, understanding QC, future-proofing your business, improving SOPs or standard procedures that you have. And if you've got other people involved, if you've got a team, improving training as well. So there are multiple opportunities to make you a better business person and make your business stronger if you solve problems with the mindset that this is an opportunity to improve the machine and to improve yourself, rather than just going, oh my God, I got a problem. What a disaster, right? And it's only human nature to go, oh God, we've got a problem. Oh, that's not great. That's normal. But the main thing is to let go of that and get on with solving it and recognize that by solving it, you're strengthening yourself and your business. That is the difference. It's not being purer than the driven snow. It's having a normal human reaction, but then getting down to it and seeing the positive. That's one of the aspects of a strong business builder, as opposed to somebody who's just going to not cope and just end up not building a business. With other suppliers, the same kind of thing. You can improve your relationship. Again, writing a brief for designers or photographers, if you end up with a poor result, then you may have to learn, okay, next time I'm going to write a clear brief. Okay, this is a common learning with photography or designers. With business partners, you can improve your relationship if you handle it properly. As I said, if you just apologize as a substitute for getting organized, you're not going to do very well long term. But again, it can improve your skill set of organizing relationships and roles and task allocation. There's a sharp learning curve there, but that can be a very useful one as well. And again, you can improve SOPs or even create standard procedures if you don't have any in place. So what's coming up then with Covey's system is really the habits of interdependence, which grow out of these insights. Habits 4, 5, and 6. Habit 4 is thinking win-win. Interpersonal leadership. Habit 5 is seeking first to understand and then to be understood, which is basically the principle of empathy. And habit 6 is synergizing. In other words, creative cooperation. 1 + 1 = more than 2 if you get it right. So that's what's coming up. But just to reflect back on this quite lengthy but very important area, I think really you cannot properly develop good relationships between other people until you've got a good relationship with yourself. And apart from some self-esteem and other such emotional issues, really it comes down to being a proactive person. In other words, being willing to change and to have the positivity to believe that you can change your life, you can change your circumstances, you can create a business, you can make stuff that didn't exist before, you can change things about your behavior that you didn't used to do. Habit 2, the beginning with an end in mind, really important. Quite often the chronic problem of having no clear goal and no clear aim in your business shows up in the day-to-day with habit 3, which is first things first. You can't prioritize things if you don't know what's important. So you can't do time management without setting longer term goals and visions, I would argue. And all of those things together make up personal leadership or private victory, as Covey puts it. And really, you're not going to end up with good relationships if you don't get on top of those things first. So it's always worth revisiting. If there's something, a problem that shows up in a relationship, how is this a reflection of my lack of personal management and leadership? And it's nearly always an element of that in there. I'm not saying you should blame yourself for everything, but you may as well reflect on the things that you can change about yourself, because that is under your control. Other people are not. So I think it's a very proactive thing, talking about habit one, to work on yourself, because that is under your control. Other things may be under your influence, but they're not under your control. So bitching and moaning about Amazon, about your supplier, about your business partner, that is a weak and a not a business building mentality. It's natural enough to do a bit of it. Fine, do it over a beer, get it out of your system, but then focus, what can I change? And a lot of the time it's, what habits can I change about myself? But then when it does come to the interpersonal stuff, the emotional bank account is a fantastically simple and powerful metaphor. And it's all about trust, which is such a key currency online. Trust is the scarce currency. And the six major deposits you can make, just to review, are number one, understanding the individual. Number two, attending to the little things. Number three, keeping commitments. Number four, clarifying expectations. Number five, showing personal integrity. And number six, apologizing sincerely. Sincerely being the word when you make a withdrawal. And as I've said, I think that applies to customers, your product suppliers, at least any other suppliers, people you're outsourcing to, and in business partners or team members, to say just the very least of the areas that I could just think of off the top of my head. So this is, once again, very easy to overlook because it sounds obvious. And in a sense, it is. It isn't anything your grandmother couldn't have told you. It's not high tech. It's not clever, strategic. It's not a business strategy in the pure sense. But what I do think it is a very neglected area. And if you just use this as a checklist, go through all your relationships and really reflect honestly, maybe with your team or with your business partner about this, I think you'll find there's a lot of work you can do that is very simple, that if you implement rigorously and consistently, you will really massively improve everything about your business relationships and thus everything about your business. Because in the end, I think everything is driven by relationships. Even if you're selling physical widgets online, you're selling widgets to people. They are made by people, and people are on the other end of the Amazon system. They are people, not numbers. And if we never forget that, we're going to stand out ahead of those who do forget it. Thanks so much for listening. Speak to you in the next show. Hey there, this is Michael, and saying thank you for listening to the amazing FBA episode you just listened to. Just want to mention that I mentioned at the top of the show our sister podcast, the 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, which is for 6, 7, and 8-figure sellers on Amazon. Specifically, that's who we're geared to. I'm sure that people doing bigger numbers will still have a lot of things to learn from it. And people doing smaller numbers, sure, but it's not going to be immediately actionable for you. So if that is you, keep listening to the Amazing FBA podcast. But if you're 6, 7, or 8 figures on Amazon or e-commerce, I really think you should check it out. So I just want to give you a flavor of what's coming up, or rather just a bit of a list. Not deeply exciting as podcasts go, but I just wanted to, if you're just checking it out, know whether it's for you and what sort of topics we cover. Here's what's coming up. So first of all, an interview with our own Ashley Pierce from the 10K Collective Mastermind, who is talking about his last year in e-commerce, where he went from $750,000 in 2018 in turnover to a run rate this year of $1.25 million. So that's from scratch in 3 years. Super smart man, and he had a lot of the right skills going in. And let's be clear about that. But he didn't have tons of capital, just the conventional amount. So I still think that's an incredible result. And also, he's a really nice guy and a very, very clear-minded and feet-on-the-ground business thinker. So there's so much value. If nothing else, check that out. Really cannot urge you enough. I mean, these guys that have been in the Mastermind for nearly 2 years now have just honed their game to the nth degree. I've never heard quality discussion like I hear in there. And I don't say that because it's about me. It's not about me. I'm just privileged to work with some super smart and great people. So do check it out. Other things coming up then, lots and lots of industry expert interviews. Here's a flavour. And honestly, this is about half the list of people who've agreed to come on for an interview. So several of these are already recorded. So with Ryan Sheffert from Xcube Manufacturing, we are going to be talking about custom manufacturing in China. He's been out there about 18 years. And custom manufacturing, I can't emphasise enough how much that is the future. If you're still just purely private labelling stuff, it's going to get harder and harder to make a profit with that business model. I mean, I think it's got a
year or two left in it, but sooner or later you need to get onto custom manufacturing. So this is a hyper-critical skill set that you should be learning, I believe, to future-proof your business. Second is funding, which is another massive topic, how to fund growth, because any scaling business, as Vern Harnish says, growth sucks cash. This is the law of gravity of scaling. Therefore, we've got to look into raising capital, and one way is debt, and Bruce Mack is going to talk to us about that. Aaron O'Sullivan is coming on from Systems Culture Impact to talk about outsourcing and company culture. And again, if you're scaling up a business, you're going to have a very painful time if you keep trying to do it yourself, even if you've hit, say, $1 million a year equivalent, which I know some people have without a VA. Guess what? You're not going to get to 2 million without a VA or basically a proper team on board. So that's something that's definitely a big barrier to entry. And also, to put it on its head, something that will add to your comfort and enjoyment of your business if you go with it. So that's a few things that we got in depth, just in a bit more superficial detail. Chris Shipfling of Providium with Jason Somerville is going to be talking about selling your FBA business, and they have a private equity take on that from the Wall Street side. So really fascinating angle on that. FBA reimbursements with Ben Chambers. Amazon often owes about $50,000 to $100,000 for any serious seller at some points in the year. How do you get your hands on that? It's just a fantastic source of cash, apart from anything else. So Amazon's got your cash. If you can get it out of the system, guess what? That's fantastically healthy for your business. Ash Munger's talking about quality control from China. He's got an incredibly detailed system for doing that. He's been out in China running IMEX sourcing for 9 years now, so he seriously knows his business backwards and sideways and in detail. Connor Gillivan's going to talk about the quick outsourcing system that FreeUp represents and how to outsource quickly and easily. Paulina Masson came on this morning. We talked about pricing, which is a very underrated and very important thing for driving profits. Will Churnland's coming back on, and we're going to talk about evaluating the competition from a real sort of standpoint of somebody who's not just looking at the numbers, although Will is super smart with numbers, but from the point of view of the overall competitive landscape. Really, as ever, Will's a brilliant Amazon thinker, always worth hearing. Kevin King's coming back on. Not even sure what we're going to be talking about yet with Kevin, but you know what? He's always a super smart guy when it comes to the marketing side, so I'm sure we have lots to learn from him. What else we got coming up? Amazon account suspension with Joshua Price, launching to overseas markets with John Cant, PPC advertising and profit margins with Mike Zagare of PPC Entourage. What else? Chris Rawlings is coming back from Judo Launch. Presumably we'll be talking about launch. Alex Oxford is coming on to talk about sales tax. He is super smart at explaining this stuff in very simple terms, but yet dealing with all the details as well. Alex is absolutely a critical person to listen to if you sell in the USA. Kostas Anastasiadis is coming back to talk about short-term funding. Brad Moss is coming back, who used to run Seller Central, so he's a super sharp guy as well. China sourcing with Manuel Bekvar. Law for Amazon sellers with Paul Ruffelson. Augustus Kligas is coming back on to talk about various different topics. John Cavendish talk about translations. Paul Harvey to talk about chatbots. Brian Johnson talk about PPC. Greg Mercer to talk about product research. Nadine Eich to talk about Germany and customer service in Germany. And probably going to get my old accountant Penny Lowe back to talk about bookkeeping basics. Whew. We have, as you can tell, an incredible amount of really practical, useful content coming up, a lot of which is already recorded and is definitely coming out over the next few weeks. So get yourself over there, folks. It's just a place you need to be. This is not just a bunch of let's fill the airwaves with the latest kind of hack that's going to die in 2 months. I'm taking care to really focus on content that is as evergreen as possible. Why? Because then you listen once and implement over multiple years, or at least months, and then you get the payoff over time, so you get better return on your listening time, if you like. And I think that's a really important metric. Return on listening for me is something I aim to give you in spades. So get yourself over there. 10K Collective is the thing you need to look for. 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, to give it the full title. You can look on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts apps, or Stitcher. We should be on Spotify any minute now, and we're just waiting to get ourselves on Google Play and Google Podcasts. So it will be more and more available. If you can't find it on your listening device, your preferred device, then just go to the website and you can listen directly there. 10kcollective.com. That's 10k, 10k for kilo. Collective is collective. kklective.com. That's 10kklective.com. Thanks so much for listening to such a very, very lengthy post-roll pitch, if you like. I'm not actually selling anything, so it's not a pitch in any strict sense. It's free and it always will be. Of course, we will mention paid services from time to time, but I believe in giving like 95%, 99% value and a little pitch at the end. So it's not going to be a pitch fest. We are just aiming to build massive goodwill and getting ourselves out there and known. And of course, we hope to attract some wonderful people to our masterminds. And if people can use the services that some of our experts provide, so much the better. But really, that's our main thrust, is to get ourselves out there and build goodwill. So you know more than you're ever going to need to know in life about this podcast. Get yourself over there and listen. Stop listening to Amazing FBA. What are you still doing here? I'm going to go and have a cup of tea. I suggest you go and do the same. And I'll speak to you in the next show.